in the book of Psalm. We're looking at Psalm 62. So go ahead and open up to Psalm 62 at this point. You know, Jim did a really good job last week where he was covering about David writing about the confidence that David has in the Lord. Psalm 62, we're going to see that theme being built upon. We're going to see David write about how we need to lean on the Lord, rely on the Lord more so than anything that man can offer. And I think that'll become very clear. It's a theme we've also brought up several times throughout the summer while we're studying Psalms. So this is kind of a recap of that message. And his full focus is on that within Psalm 62. You know, I always like to go back and look at where David is in his life to see, get a perspective about where he might be coming from when he's writing a psalm. And we've looked in the past through the book of 1 and 2 Samuel of those accounts. Today, we really don't know where David or where what position he was in when this psalm was written. But what do we know? Well, we know that David was under attack. Saul was trying to kill him. We had people all around him who was trying to capture him to take his life. He was during a lot of stresses. We know that he had to deal with these types of things, and you're going to see that become even more evident when we look at Psalm 62. Now, something I don't normally do, and you know, we typically study out of the New American Standard Bible. That's the version that we use. There's a lot of versions out there. The way the wording is within Psalm 62, it's helpful to look. I'm going to look at the NIV. There are others out there you can look as well. But it helps paint the picture. There's different words being used, but it's the same message. So anytime I mention the NIV, I'm going to refer to that or say this is from the NIV. But our study is going to be coming out of the New American Standard Bible. Don't often mention that, but I am today just because I will be bouncing around. I don't want to confuse folks when that happens. Since we don't have any history to go through, I think it's a really good idea just to read Psalm 62 to get started. That helps us get a good basis before we dig into each verse and look at them in more detail. But I want you to answer or think about something. What are some of the things that the world turns to for security? Money? What else? Good job, putting security in their jobs. What else? Power, power that they can gain. Maybe even placing their hope and trust in somebody who might be perceived as powerful. Yep. These are all good things. And you're going to see not much has changed. You're going to see these things mentioned by David in Psalm 62. So as I'm reading this, think about, I'm going to ask this question again. Think about two things. One thing, what does David rely on? And the second one is, what is he giving caution about? What is he giving caution about what we should not be placing our trust in? So let's read through the book, Psalm 62. My soul waits in silence for God only. From him is my salvation. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be greatly shaken. How long will you assail a man that you may murder him, all of you, like a leaning wall, like a tottering fence? They have counseled only to thrust him down from his high position. They delight in falsehood. They bless with their mouth, but inwardly they curse. My soul wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be shaken. O God, my salvation and my glory rest. The rock of my strength, my refuge is in God. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Men of low degree are only vanity, and men of rank are a lie. In the balances they go up, They are together lighter than breath. Do not trust in oppression. Do not vainly hope in robbery. If riches increase, do not set your heart upon them. Once God has spoken, twice I have heard this, that power belongs to God. And loving kindness is yours, O Lord, for you recompense a man according to his work. So let me ask the question a little bit different way. What is David saying we should put our trust in? In God. Have you heard this before? He said it over and over and over throughout our study throughout the summer. And in this psalm, that's what he focuses on. What are some of the things that he's warning us to not place our trust in? Riches, strength, people, rank, Brian? In man, that's right. Does this sound very familiar to the answers you just gave? Again, not much has changed in thousands of years. The same things that people struggled with at that point are the same things that we struggle with today. And things that we need that reminder of, that caution, to make sure that we're not placing our hope in those things too. So let's look at verse 1. Eric. No, go ahead. Okay. Verse 1. In verse 1 through 4, you're going to hear David. He's essentially writing about himself, where he places his trust, some of the ill intent his enemies has against him. We're going to see that brought to light within the first four verses. And notice the differences that David places between trusting in God and then what the ill intent is from his enemies. So let's look at verse 1. My soul waits in silence for God only. From him is my salvation. Waits in silence. And this is where the NIV uses the wording, truly my soul finds rest in God. And we see almost a stillness from David, waiting for the Lord, putting trust in the Lord. It's an active decision that he's making. You know, it's easy for us to want to take everything and make sure we stay in control of everything. But we need to be reminded that sometimes we need to wait on God. Find peace. Wait on him. Put our trust in him. That's what David is saying at the beginning of verse 1. But why is he saying this? Well, that answer is in the second part of that verse. From him is my salvation. You know, if we have salvation from the Lord, if we have refuge in the Lord, that's going to encourage us to wait on him, to put that faith in him, to make sure we're not trying to just control everything on our own. It should give us some comfort when you really think about it. Now look at verse 2. Verse 2, he's essentially saying the same thing, just in a different way. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be greatly shaken. You know, Rob, a few weeks ago on a Wednesday night, was going through where we should put the foundation of our lives on. And this is something going to be familiar to everybody. When you were young, you may have sung a song that tells you this. The wise man built his house on a rock. The fool built his house upon the sand. A parable that Jesus mentioned in Matthew. We learn that in this parable, what happened to the house the foolish man built? The rain came, winds came, and the house fell. And great was its fall. The wise man that built the house on the rock, winds came, rains came, house stood. Because the foundation was firm. That's what David is saying here, that God, he only, God is my rock. God is my foundation. God is where I'm putting my footing. And that's going to give him a lot of stability as he encounters difficulties from his enemies. Look at those verse 1 and verse 2, though. I kind of scanned over this, but it's important. Look at the word only. Notice that David is placing his hope and trust only in God. His rock, his foundation is only within God. That tells us a lot about David. That also gives us some good insight about how we should be. You know, we can't trust in riches. We can't trust in man, but we can always trust in God. That's what David is saying in verses 1 and 2. We know that David didn't have a lot of peace in his life. Saul was pursuing him, trying to kill him. His own countrymen were telling Saul to please Saul where he was so he could be captured. Some of David's closest people were betraying him. Saul's servants were waiting out in front of his house one evening, trying to kill him the next morning. He didn't have a lot of... I'm sure he had some easy times in his life, but when you read through his account, he faced a lot of difficulties. And in verse 1 and 2, knowing David always relied on God for that strength is really important. Now look at verse 3. David turns his attention and almost addresses his enemies at this point. How long will you assail, or how long will you attack a man, that you may murder him, all of you, like a leaning wall, like a tottering fence? He's asking, how long is he going to be attacked? It's almost like David going to the Lord and saying, look, my enemies are relentless. They're attacking me over and over and over again. New American Standard says that you may murder him. The NIV says, or the translation is written, would all of you throw me down? So the imagery here is taking David down. They're trying to do this through a lot of physical efforts that I just mentioned. But we're also going to learn they used a lot of emotional, or a lot of attacking him spiritually to bring him down as well. We're going to see that more. That might be a little bit new in the next few verses. But when you see a leaning wall or a tottering fence, how stable are those two things? What do they have in common? How easy is it to go over and push a fence over if it's tottering? If a wall's leaning, how much security can you have from that wall? It's coming down. You get the imagery here that David's being attacked. They're pursuing him, trying to get him to fall. And they're attacking him in times where he may not be at his strongest. He might be like a leaning wall or a tottering fence. But what do we know about David? We just learned in verses 1 and 2 that his enemies did not know. His strength is coming from the Lord. So even though his physical being can be weakened, his strength he's getting through the Lord can't. Again, important thing we need to think about today. Yes, Chuck. Yeah. Yeah, Chuck is saying that, you know, his enemies, if an enemy sees a weakness, they're going to try to exploit it. And Chuck, your very statement is what's being written about in the next few verses, too. They are looking for that. And if they find that weakness, they're going to use it. You know, what does Satan do today? Same thing. Is he always going to attack us when we're our strongest? Is he going to wait till there's a little bit of a crack of vulnerability in your life? Do you think that's how he's going to attack you? It's the same thing. Good point, Chuck. So let's look at verse 4. They have counseled only to thrust him down in his high position. They delight in falsehood. They bless with their mouth, but inwardly they curse. Who is they that David is referring to in verse 4? His enemies, everybody that's trying to attack him. But notice what they're doing in verse 4. that's different than what we've studied so far throughout the summer. They're attacking him in a different way. They are counseling only to thrust him down. You know, it's almost like his enemies are working to remove the honor that God has placed on David for David to be the king. He's the anointed king taking Saul's position. They're trying to prevent that from happening. We've already studied that Saul tried to kill David physically, tried to capture him. People tried to capture him that were his servants. But look what else they're doing. They delight in falsehood. Think about that. Delight in falsehood. You know, the NIV uses they delight in lying or take delight in lies. When somebody is spreading lies about you, is that harming you physically or is that harming you more emotionally or can that attack you spiritually? You know, we really haven't talked about this much yet, but David in verse 4 is saying this is happening to him, something that we deal with today. They bless with their mouths, but inwardly they curse. Well, those are things we definitely deal with today. We see it happen all the time, where people are maybe saying things that are nice to your face or nice if they're on in front of a camera, but as soon as that camera is turned off or they leave your presence, they start cursing you or cursing whatever they're talking about. Happens today. David dealt with this. Same thing. Same situation. And all along the intention is to bring him down. And it seems like his enemies are willing to do that at all cost. Whether that's physical, emotionally, spiritually, they want to bring David down. Yeah, it can be emotionally and spiritually both. It can happen at the same time. Yep. Just things to think about. You know, sometimes, at least when I'm reading through the Old Testament, it's easy to read through and think about the facts or take it from more of an education type of standpoint. But when you really think about what the folks were enduring at that time, nothing's changed. And we can gain a lot of strength by looking at how they handle these situations. With David, he pours it out in the book of Psalms. We can see that over and over and over again. Now in verse 5, David turns back to looking at the strength that he has in the Lord. You're going to see that verse 5 and 6 is almost an exact repeat of what was in verses 1 and 2. But there is a little bit of a difference. See if you can pick out what those differences are. My soul wait in silence for God only, for my hope is from Him. He only is my rock and my salvation, my stronghold. I shall not be shaken. On God is my salvation and my glory rest. The rock of my strength, my refuge is in God. Again, going back to the point of, I've already said that my strength comes from you. My enemies are attacking me from every direction possible. And by the way, I get my strength from you. I can't handle this on my own. And when you look at verse 6, there is a little bit of difference between verse 6 and verse 1. In verse 1, he says, let me go back to my notes. Verse 1, from him is my salvation. In verse 6, it says, for my hope is from him. A little bit different wording. It's about the same message, but it's the point where salvation comes from the Lord, and I'm placing my hope in him, and my hope is from him. I'm gaining that strength from him. Chuck. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, Chuck, you're reading my notes, I think. You're right on point here with this one. You know, verse 1, it's a declaration. In verse 5, it's almost an increased or a placement of hope in the Lord. You can almost see a progression there where I know that you're going to be protect me. My enemies are doing great harm against me, but I am confident you're going to protect me. Good point. Eric. Yeah, Eric is saying, you know, some of these psalms were put to music. And if this one was, it's repeating, kind of like the songs that we do today. And can you imagine if you were with the group singing the book of Psalm 62? It's a lot of encouragement there. It's a good point, Eric. Look at verse 8. Verse 8, David does change his perspective. It's almost like he's addressing his people. So verses, you know, 1 through 7 was about David. Verses 8... 8, 9, and 10 maybe or more for him instructing or talking to his people. Look at verse 8. Trust in him at all times, O people. Pour out your heart before him. God is a refuge for us. Again, he's encouraging his people. He's encouraging his people to trust God part of the time, all of the time. No matter what, put your trust in God. That's what he's encouraging here. Pour out yourself before him. Pour your heart out before him. Pouring, empty your contents. Bring your troubles to God. You know, we already read in previous Psalms where God does take an account of wrongs done to his people. God has tears placed in a jar. That's in one of the Psalms we just covered. He knows these things. But we need to pour ourselves out to God. Bring those troubles to him. Ask for his strength. Things we continually need to do today. Because God is our refuge. Now verses 9 and 10. I want to spend a little bit more time on these because of the way they're written. Personally, it was very confusing to me when I was reading it to see what was really David getting at here. But look at verse 9. Men of low degree are only vanity, and men of rank are a lie. Low degree are only vanity. NIV says, surely the lowborn are but a breath. A little bit different wording, but the same meaning. Low degree or newborn, those are people who are on this earth who might have a lower social status, might be poorer, may not have as much power or be powerless. How does David describe those people? They're vanity or they are but a breath. We can't put our trust in them. That's not where our trust lies. But look at men of rank are a lie. The NIV says, high estate are a delusion. Those are people who might be have a higher social status or have more wealth or have more power. What does David say about them? Nine? Yeah, that they're a lie. That they're a lie, that they're a delusion. NIV uses the word delusion. Again, same point as people of low degree or low estate. There's no difference. We can't put our trust in either one. And whenever you continue reading, this brings it to light even more. Keep reading. In the balances, they go up. They together are lighter than breath. Now think about this. How do you balance something? You almost have to have it on a scale. And I always think of those scales where you got two platforms and you put something in one and the other, and you try to make sure that whatever is in either one is balanced. Okay? What happens if you've got more weight in my right hand, your left, than my left hand? What happens? left hand starts doing what? Starts going up. The object with the lighter mass goes up. So look at verse 9 again. In the balances, they go up. Men of low rank or men that are maybe lower social status or higher, they together go up. They're lighter, is what this is saying. But lighter than what? They're lighter than breath. How much does breath weigh? Yeah, you can't even measure it. If you've got a scale and you breathe on it, what's the scale going to do? It's not going to move. It'll stay balanced. Okay? But what is David saying about people who are lower or higher social class, wealthier or poorer, those who are powerful or not powerful, together, they go up. They're lighter than breath. There's no substance to that. There's no weight to that. So how much hope and trust are you going to put in something that doesn't have any substance or weight? Compare that to God. What if we try to put God on a scale compared to these people? You know, you can't even comprehend that weight difference. So who are you going to put your trust in? Something that has mass or weight or power that's lighter than breath? Are you going to put your trust in God? That's what David is saying here. I just think it's a really neat way that he's writing and explaining or expressing how important it is for us to not put our focus on riches. Chuck, you had your hand up? Yep. Chuck is saying that the only way we're going to ever have any substance is if we put ourselves with God, latch onto Him. Mark. Yep. Mark, a lot for me to summarize there, but you know the point Mark is making is it's so easy for us today to put our hope and trust in man's power, in wealth or anything like this. But it cannot even be compared or weighed against what we can obtain through the Lord, through God. Yep, all good points. All right, anything else before we move on? Okay, look at verse 10. And Mark and Mission actually used this word just a minute ago. Do not trust in oppression and do not vainly hope in robbery. Looking at this phrase, there's a commonality between the two. In the NIV, instead of oppression, they use the word exploitation. It's the idea that you're taking something from somebody. You're exploiting somebody to either bring them down or advance you. If you're a robber, you're taking things from somebody. You're stealing from somebody. And it's just interesting that David brought that up. And he's saying, don't put your trust in these things. And we know as Christians that we shouldn't be stealing from people. We shouldn't be exploiting people. Is exploitation used a lot in this world for people to get ahead? It absolutely is. Today, and it seems like it was then as well. And he's saying, don't put your trust in that. We certainly should not be behaving that way. But when we see others behaving that way, don't let it bring you down. You need to remember that the Lord's in control. Don't try to fix that on your own. The Lord's going to handle that. But continue reading. If riches increase, do not set your heart upon them. This is another one I want to spend just a few minutes looking at. Because in the U.S., this is something easy for us. You know, whether you gain riches honestly or not, in the U.S., there is a lot of wealth. There's a lot of wealth in Jefferson City. But what does Scripture say about wealth? Is wealth wrong in itself? Is there anything biblically wrong about wealth? No, we see that Abraham, this is when Kerry was teaching about all the abundance of wealth and resources he had. Solomon, the Lord gave Solomon wealth that we'll never be able to imagine. Job was an individual who is wealthy. Jerry.
Yeah, but there's a verse that it seems like everybody gets this verse wrong. People say, well, money is the root of all evil. It does not say that. It says the love of money is the root of all evil, or the root of all kinds of evil.
Yeah. Yeah, in Timothy, you know, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil or all kinds of you know, it's a good point. And we're going to get back to that in just a little bit as well. We're going to look at a few verses, Jerry, and this is kind of wrapping that whole idea up in that. What does Scripture warn us against, though? And Jerry hit on this a minute ago. Setting your heart on it. That's what David writes. Don't set your heart on it. Chuck. Yeah, Chuck is saying that, you know, back in the Old Testament, read where Abraham put his trust in God, not his wealth, to solve these problems. Something we definitely need to remember today. Look at Proverbs 11, Proverbs chapter 11 and verse 28. We're going to go through just a couple verses pretty quickly. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 28. He who trusts and his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. Whoever trusts in their riches will fall. Again, the idea, we should not be putting our trust in riches. We need to trust in the Lord. Be righteous, put our trust in the Lord, and you're going to flourish like a green leaf. Look at Proverbs chapter 18, verse 11. Proverbs 18, verse 11. When I read this verse, it was kind of humorous to me the way it's written. Because a rich man's wealth is a strong city. If we stop there, what's the message that you get? A rich man's wealth, you can gain some trust. You can gain some security. But read the second part of that verse. And like a high wall in his own imagination. So anytime somebody is wealthy, is putting their trust in that wealth, what does this say?
It's
in somebody's head. Because true refuge is only going to come from God. I just found the way that verse is written a little fun. Look at Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. And this is something that everyone will be very familiar with. And we'll probably close here because of time. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroy and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You know, earthly treasures, wealth, and anything wealth can help us obtain, it erodes. If you buy a new house, whether that's a brand new house or a new house that has been around for a long time, have you ever been in a house that never needed repairs?
Oh, man.
It seems like one thing breaks, and then something else breaks, and something else breaks. There's people who build their whole careers on fixing things that break in your houses. How about clothes? You know, you buy clothes, yeah, it's nice, but you wear it, what happens?
It rips,
you get stains on it, it wears out. Vehicles, I've never seen a good auto repair shop who is not busy, you know, because things break. Everything that man builds, everything that we can have in wealth to purchase is eroding, it's going away. Moth and rust are going to destroy these things. But what if we are building our treasures toward spiritual things? What if we're putting our hope and trust in God? You know, it seems like even our bodies, when we're young, we're invincible. As we age, our bodies erode. Same type of thing. But what I can gain a lot of comfort in, but as you age, can you practice fruits of the Spirit? Is it easier to practice those things as you age and become more wise? You know, it's almost backwards. You've got this physical element of everything eroding, and then you've got the spiritual element of everything building. And it's building to the point where once we die, that's so we can be in heaven, so we can be with the Lord. That's where we need to be putting our treasures in. That's what David is saying in Psalm 62. We need to constantly focus on putting our trust in the Lord. The Lord is our refuge. And everything that's available on this earth, whether we are of low or high estate, it doesn't matter. All those things are going away. They will pass. But the treasures we lay up in the Lord, the refuge we have, the hope we have in the Lord, the faith that we put in Him through His Son Jesus, that's where true strength is. It's an encouraging psalm. I encourage you to go home and read it through it a few times. It's just a really neat psalm to kind of focus on. So thanks for your attention.